Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Governor Mike DeWine is proposing a 17-point plan to try to stop or at least slow gun violence in the wake of the mass shootings in Dayton and El Paso. He's called for a so-called red flag law that allows police to confiscate guns from people at risk of violence with them. He wants to expand background checks on all gun sales and make tougher sentences for illegally possessing or selling or using a gun, among other things. He told reporters at a press conference last week that his proposals will make a difference. Okay, so it's our weekly reporter to Roundtable. Once again, Kathy Kandisky is with us from the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome back. And also Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Welcome.
Great to be here.
And Julie Carr Smythe from the Associated Press. Thank you.
Good morning, Ann.
First, let's talk about the general larger response to these episodes in El Paso and then a few hours later in Dayton. Kathy, how do you summarize how our largely controlled, Republican-controlled Ohio General Assembly has responded?
Well, among some, there was a pretty immediate response, especially some of the lawmakers in the Dayton area. I'm thinking about Senator Peggy Lehner and Representative Turner. Of course, Governor Mike DeWine, who lives close by there as well. He's from Cedarville, I believe. Mm-hmm. There was a pretty immediate response. I think people were pretty much shocked coming on the heels of the Dallas or the Texas shooting. And just a week before that, there was the shooting out in Gilroy, California. So there were three right in a row within a week's period of time. I think there was a big reaction. Of course, the question is now, people were putting out proposals. Mike DeWine came out really quickly with a proposal, which I think he got a lot of good press for. The question is now, what are they going to do?
The proposals aren't new. I mean, there's been lots of proposals out there. And is there any sense that anything's going to be different this time?
Well,
Joe Ingles?
Yeah, I mean, these have been around forever. Democrats have pushed a lot of these plans for more than a decade. And Governor Kasich, some of the red flag laws and some of those things, he was for those as well, the background checks. We did see, ironically, the week before the shootings, there was a Quinnipiac University poll that came out. And it showed, I believe, 91 or 92%, a very high number of Ohioans said that they favored background checks. And so, I mean, it's like we are seeing some, absent what happened in Dayton, we're seeing some shifts in, you
public
know,
attitudes.
People are saying we want this.
And but that's not, has never really made much of a difference anyway. Julie Kerschmeyer?
Well, I do see this as different, and here's why. I think that the two closely timed shootings were different in character in almost every way. One of the perpetrators maybe was attached with hate-type groups. The other maybe had some mental health issues. One was sort of, if you want to characterize him politically, right, to the right of the political spectrum, the other was to the left.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was sort of this watershed moment where everybody was like, well, what has happened in the past, even with heinous incidents like Parkland or Sandy Hook, there's been a lot of like, well, here's one solution, but that won't work in this case, or here's another. And mm-hmm. this was just like, well, it's happening, and it really isn't about politics, and it really isn't just about mental health, and it really isn't just about hate. It's just got, you know, people are dying, and something needs to happen.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. It's Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press. Also with us, Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. We are talking about the legislative response in Ohio to the recent mass shootings in California, El Paso, and Dayton. Let me ask you this. Is there a sense that other states have reacted in the way that Ohio has, or do you think there was more impetus here because of the Dayton shooting, Kathy?
I'm just really struck by the chance when Governor Mike DeWine went out the first, right after the shooting, the chance of do something, and he came back the very next day, I think it was, and said, you're right, we have to do something. That response to me was a little bit unprecedented. It seemed to me as unprecedented. And I think it reflects a growing, I mean, just the do something. People aren't really sure what needs to be done, but they know something needs to be done. So now it's incumbent on the lawmakers to follow up and do something.
And I think that the Turner, you know, the congressman from Dayton, Mike Turner, came out shortly thereafter. His daughter was right across the street when the shooting happened in the same Oregon district, probably enjoying that beautiful summer night, having some dinner with friends or whatever. It was a very, you know, it was tragic in that way that so many of the people we found out, the backstories of the victims, they were someone who never gets a night out or who had just come off maternity leave or who finally got a break from working 16 hours a day all the time, you know. And so he came out and said, you know, I'm going to be in favor of restricting military-style weapons, which some we should talk about whether what was used was a military-style weapon, red flag law, et cetera. We saw President Trump come out and say there are reasonable background checks that can happen and that he's having discussions with Democrats. And it just it felt like different than it has in the past.
I also think that we're going to still see a difference in the proposals between what the Democrats want and what the Republicans want, because there is so much money out there from the NRA. And the NRA has been very careful about how they couch things right now. But they really have always opposed restrictions on guns because they see it as a slippery slope kind of thing. And so I think, you know, I think that it looks like they're taking steps to do something. Whether that something will be enough to make it for everyone is a different,
you know. And that gets to the issue of what do we really know about what does stem gun violence? We don't really, because there's very little research on it.
That's the problem. That's the problem. I mean, nobody's really sure. Some of the things they're proposing, like these red flag laws, you try and apply it to what just happened in Ohio, and you're like, would that have made a difference? I don't know, but a lot of people don't think it would.
Right, because a red flag law and you know, the DeWine proposal he's saying is short of being a red flag law by the traditional measure because it's got these extra due process protections, if you will. But it would cause somebody to say, oh, you know, Connor Batts, who was that shooter, he seems to be unstable. He's talking about dark thoughts. He's, you know, fantasizing about killing people. But I asked the governor this, who along that line would be responsible under a red flag law? Would it have been his parents?
Would there be an obligation as well?
His classmates, his teachers, law enforcement, they all knew. And we've all seen the interviews now that everyone was aware of this. But it is it's a tricky thing because those on the side, the mental health advocacy community, looks at it, well, you know, every time we say something offensive, every time we have a bad day, every, you know, I mean, there are First Amendment issues with these kind of laws, and it's unclear what's stopping someone from calling the police right now and telling them anything they wanted to about Connor Batts.
So how did the governor respond as far as that goes?
He just said it's the role of everyone along the line, and that, you know, none of his proposals would work in a vacuum, that they have to come together. And this is the kind of, I guess, momentum or energy that I'm feeling around it, is there's people are saying it has to be, you know, not either or, but both and kind of conversation in the country about mental health and hate groups and violence training and...
But, you know, one of the things that's really strange about this is after something like this happens, you hear the people who were close to the person who did the shooting say, well, yeah, you know, this was odd, or they said this, but, you know, I didn't think they were really capable of that, you know. So there's a reluctance on the fact on the side of the people who could report it to report it because they don't really see the person being capable of something
they're
that
not
heinous.
Trained
right.
And they're,
right. They're
know,
not trained.
They're too
we're
close.
Not. Right. And you're too close and you just you know, you tend to see the good in people, or I think most of us do. And then there's the other fact of it, and we've seen this in domestic violence cases all over the place. You know, you'll have someone who is a danger to their ex-wife, ex-husband. They've, you know, tried all different kinds of things. They've called the police, God, you know, how many times they've called the police, and nothing gets done. because there's a breakdown in the system. The system is huge. It's large. And we see this all the time. There's different cases that make the paper of where someone has been very violent and it's been ignored, or it's kind of gotten dropped along the line, or a court has not seen it to be a big deal like the person who was reporting it. So, you know, even if all those things are in place, there's still no safeguard that you're going to catch this.
The one thing they're not talking so much about is the gun part of it.
Right.
That's, you know, that right. Which a lot of people would argue is the part that could really make a difference.
You mean the type of gun?
The type of gun, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, because in both of these, correct me if I'm wrong, I've been away, they were semi-automatic,
I think.
I believe so. I don't know a lot about guns.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
lots of rounds.
Right. They were the ones you don't have to continually load after you fire each shot.
Right.
Yeah.
Which means you can kill a lot of people very quickly. I mean, it's kind of shocking when they talk about that the police in Dayton had him down within a minute, but still.
In 30 seconds. Yeah. And he
still
and
killed
he
eight.
Killed nine and injured more than 30.
Yeah.
It's a lot. That's a whole lot.
It is.
In a
little
very
period
short
of time.
Amount of time.
Right.
So, I mean, some other interesting dynamics might be at play now that are not necessarily haven't been in the past, which is the NRA is a mess. The NRA is internally melting down.
Yeah.
And
right.
I just saw a report last week from the Center for State Spending and Politics, or whatever the name of that is. They had done a thing that was showing NRA donations are down all over the country. They're not the unified sort of big player here that they once were. And we're seeing some of those divisions in the state of Ohio. If you look at Ohio gun owners, for example, you know, they're very frustrated with the NRAs and the Buckeye Firearms of the world that they feel have done too much compromising. And so we're seeing that kind of division.
Don't wait, done too much compromising. So these are even further pro-gun
right.
types. I mean,
right.
This isn't mm-hmm. people who aren't happy with them because they've done too much.
Right. I mean, that would not ever support a red flag law, for example,
okay.
because they say, and their argument is, in America, you know, we don't seize property from someone without due process, and that basically that's what these laws do.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, the supporters of a red flag law say that if I don't take the guns from the person who's now accused of the behavior in the interim while they're having their hearing, well, what are they going to do? They might go out and shoot the person who reported this or who they suspect reported this or get angry at the world and reporting that person could cause an incident.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a very tricky law.
We're going to take a break. We'll continue our conversation about proposals for more gun control in Ohio in the wake of the shootings in California, Texas, and Ohio. So stay with us. This is our weekly reporter roundtable on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press, and Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about legislative response in the wake of the shootings in California, Texas, and Ohio. There are, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a 17-point plan to Governor DeWine's proposal. A lot of Democrats have made proposals in the past, mm-hmm. however, and they're kind of ticked off, although I think they're going to sign on. I don't think there's any suggestion that they wouldn't sign on to this, but this has been out there before. Is
right.
there any understanding about why he went with his own plan instead of maybe—
That's the way it works.
Endorsing, I know.
That's the way it works. You know, when the Republicans are in charge, if the Democrats have a good idea, they will usually go ahead and come up with the same idea, tweak it
as
a little
if it
bit,
would,
put their
it was
own.
There all there.
Right, right,
yeah.
right. Because okay. that's the way it is. That's the way politics are. So.
And it's the same in this case with many of these things are not dissimilar from what former Governor John Kasich had
right.
proposed, as you mentioned. And, you know, but it's going to be the DeWine plan. Now, I didn't count exactly, but a good number of the 17 are actually already done. There are things that were in the budget that Mike
right.
DeWine
like
supported.
Targeting money toward mental health services.
Right. right.
Okay.
Right.
And changing the system to free up beds in psychiatric hospitals for people who are seriously
right.
mentally ill. Expanding the background checks to all sales, including ones on the internet and private sales at gun shows, that's a big deal.
That is a big deal. People have sought that for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And people have fought it a long time.
Right.
Yeah. But right now we have the dynamic that, you know, there's a group that's trying to get something like that on the ballot, right?
Right. That's right.
And so, you know, that always puts pressure on the legislature because especially, as Joe mentioned in the first segment, you know, 90%+ of Ohioans now say background checks are a good thing.
And, you know, one thing I want to point out, too, Anne, is we're talking about mental illness in relationship to this problem. But we need to be clear, too, that mentally ill people are much more likely, if they're going to hurt someone, to hurt themselves than to go out and do this. So this is, you know, that needs to be pointed out because I think there's a stigma or a fear out there when we start talking mental illness in relation to these shootings. We kind of almost underline a fear that's already out there that mentally ill people are somehow
right.
violent.
Mm-hmm.
And
vast,
really, that's
vast
not
the majority are not violent.
Yes, that's
right.
the truth.
And they're not. And people who do this aren't necessarily mentally ill.
Correct.
I mean,
correct.
By any kind of. Definition.
Yes, and
so,
just because you're mentally ill does not mean you're going to go out and shoot up people.
Right.
It's like I said, they're more likely, people with mental illness are much more likely to hurt themselves.
Right.
And I think, as Kathy hinted, you know, it feels like in a Republican-dominated state, we might see this debate lean that way or begin to try to deflect the questions on guns themselves into the mental health arena as a way to say that the problem's been addressed without actually restricting guns.
All right. So we've got the governor is proposed this 17-point plan. It's big. Is it being introduced? Has someone said that they'll introduce it, that it'll actually go forward?
Well, that's what's going to have to happen. But, of course, you know, there are some people were calling for the legislature to come back in during the summer to address this. There were similar calls in Congress, and neither body is coming back early to address this. So we'll have to wait till the fall when they plan to return. And by then, I mean, a lot of people are arguing that there'll be a loss of momentum. I mean, right now there's a lot of momentum, but a month's a long time in politics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but we have seen in the past, we have seen Republicans, mostly term limited ones, I might add, who have come out and they have sponsored some of these gun restrictions and legislation. We will probably see that again. We'll probably see some Republicans go for it.
Well, that's the problem, though, is they're a vast majority of the Ohio General Assembly. I mean, for somebody who
right.
wants this kind of legislation to be enacted, the likelihood of it, Julie Carr Smyth?
I think there are hints that it's more – that there's more support for it now than there was last
time. But enough.
Right. Well –
But now they're not just Republicans. It's never been more conservative and
right.
more pro-gun.
But remember, too, that Larry Householder had to make friends with the Democrats in
uh-huh.
order to get the speakership. He, you know, he needs them. They've been a force somewhat in the Ohio House, which is a more conservative body, the one with the smaller districts where you can have a whole district that's pro-gun in the House.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little less likely that you would in the Ohio Senate mm-hmm. because they're larger districts. And so we know that Householder has needed Democratic votes on a couple big things already. Will that make a difference? I'm not sure.
I mean, ultimately, it's going to come down to the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, what they want. I mean, they control what gets to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They'll control what the bill, if there is one, looks like. So it really lies with the Householder and Larry Obhoff, the Larrys.
The Larrys, the two Larrys, Larry and Larry. You know, Kathy, you wrote something really interesting. It was based on another report, I think, out of a consortium that includes Ohio University how many lives have been, how many life years have been lost.
Correct. And it's important to note that it was almost half a million years of life expectancy lost in a decade from gun violence, gun deaths.
In Ohio.
But it's important to note that's not all violence. It's not all homicides. It was about half homicides, half suicides, and a few accidental deaths. Correct.
Right.
But it really puts the human toll on the picture. It paints a picture. Let me spit it out correctly.
In perspective.
It paints a pretty grim picture of the human toll from gun violence. Whether or not that helps push legislation, we'll have to see. But it's a pretty stark announcement.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. That's Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. Also with us, Julie Carr Smythe from the Associated Press and Joe Ingles from Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. We're talking about the legislative response in the wake of the shootings in California, Texas, and, of course, in Dayton, Ohio. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Republican representative from Middletown, Candace Keller, has been asked to resign by the Ohio Republican Party Chair James Timken after some pretty inflammatory comments that Keller made about liberals and Democrats after the shooting. That question is, she wants to run for the Senate, but she's not their chosen candidate. So is this about the Ohio Republican Party really being offended at her comments, or is it more about getting rid of the candidate they don't endorse anyway?
Well, you know, Jane Timpen last week, she was saying that her real opposition to this was that Candace Keller came out within hours of the shooting and said all this. But, you know, in that statement that Candace Keller made, she was talking about things that, you know, the breakdown of the family and not worshiping God and, oh, well, there's gay, you know, gay marriage and, you know, breakdown of, you know, straight relationships.
Obama.
Obama, yes.
I mean, LGBTQ, you know, drag queens.
Drag queens, right.
Just
it was
about everybody but
list.
The shooter.
Yeah.
She said she blamed the LGBTQ community, drag queen advocates, marijuana, video games, snowflake, anti-Trumpers. Former President Barack Obama, thanks Obama, congressional Democrats and others for the attacks.
You know, she's got a habit, though. I mean, she's got not a habit, but a track record of making statements that are very controversial and get people all wound up and or doing things that get people all wound up. This is kind of the way she's been as a lawmaker. And so, you know, I go back to the abortion issue. I've covered a lot of that, and I remember comments that she's made about that that have had people all up in arms. And then most recently, you know, she's in charge of a Dayton area anti-abortion clinic, one of those places where they, you know, you go in and you might be pregnant and they try to steer you away from abortion. She's in charge of that. And there was a thing
That's
in
right.
the budget that gave more money to those things. And there was a whole, you know, flap about, is she trying to enrich her own clinic with state dollars, da, da, da. So there is definitely a track record that she's had with these issues, but she's got conservative support. Mm-hmm. And just last week, we saw a lot of Tea Party people coming out and defending her comments, saying, hey, she's right on target here. So while the head of the Ohio Republican Party might have been condemning it, a lot of those people who are more to the right of that are saying, we like what she said.
I think from Jane Timken's point of view, certainly the party establishment doesn't want to look insensitive to this. They don't want to look like they're blaming these other groups. They want to give a respectful sort of response to that, and they're obviously hurt. Somebody like Mike Turner, whose daughter was right there, was personally probably very frightened and worried about the whole thing. And so, you know, they don't want to look as the voice of the party as if they are not empathetic to a bunch of people being killed in one of our Ohio cities.
I'll kind of throw it out there. I was a little struck by how quick the response was. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say outrageous things, and you don't get that kind of response that quickly. So mm-hmm. I thought that was a little unusual and different about this situation.
Yeah, exactly. She has a track record. It's not unusual. State Senator Peggy Lehner of Kettering said something that caught my eye. I read it in Andy Chow's piece that she's not going to any longer be timid in expressing her support for quote unquote common sense regulation. And I'm wondering, are there other Republicans out there that you think is she part of a larger group, or is she kind of out
there?
She's
term limited, isn't she?
I think she is. Yeah. I mean, eventually
that's one group she belongs to.
Yeah. And I look at those term limited Republicans because that typically is where you see this kind of change.
Well, she said she had people because she's now co-sponsoring a bill. And I forget what the bill is exactly. It just slipped my mind. But she's co-sponsoring a bill with some Democrats. And she said that there's Republicans that are going to come on to it as well. But she didn't name them yet. So we'll see. But she says there are Republicans that are going to co-sponsor as well.
I guess she voted for these laws, though. She voted for these pro-gun rights mm-hmm. laws. Mm-hmm. It's not like she has a record of opposing them. Mm-mm. So right. Her timidity reached into her actual legislative action.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'm sure your listeners know, but I mean, Kettering is like a suburb of Dayton. I think these lawmakers from that area are really seeing this a little differently, a little more urgency than maybe they have in the past because it's hit so close to home.
Well, and I think that's what's interesting about if we do feel a new sense of energy around this is, when you see those kind of things, Lehner and Turner, you think about how many congressional districts, how many state legislative districts now have a lawmaker that has personal experience with this kind of an incident. You know, you've got California, you've got Las Vegas, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got Parkland, you've got El Paso, you've got, it goes on and on. I interviewed John Kasich last week, and he pointed out there have been something like 34 major gun incidents since he introduced his package last year.
Speaking of John Kasich, I heard he was down in El Paso.
I think he was in Dayton as well, wasn't he?
Yep, he was in Dayton.
He was
shadowing Trump.
Well, you know, let's face it, he certainly looks like someone who's running for president, whether he is or isn't. So, I mean, you know, we saw most of the candidates, the people who were out there who are running, either announced or unannounced. Yeah, they were all pretty much in those two places last week.
He also does the commentary on CNN, so I'm not sure if that—I doubt that was why he was there. Maybe he was just—
As a journalist?
He actually was there. He went to Dayton to be interviewed on CNN, and they were live from the scene or something like that.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. They came out with the DeWine administration came out with the 17-point plan pretty quickly, and I'm wondering how he campaigned. You know, he's a brand-new governor, so I'm wondering how did he campaign on these issues last year when he was running for office?
Well, he didn't really. I mean, he didn't really. This wasn't a big deal for him. But we know from looking at his past record, even when he was, you know, in the Senate, he wasn't for the assault weapons by any means.
He voted for the assault weapons ban.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a track record. If you look back on his track record, he's got that track record of being middle of the road when it comes to guns. So he's certainly not one of the more conservative gun people.
He's a former county prosecutor. I mean, he definitely comes at this from the law enforcement perspective, and there's a lot of law enforcement and prosecutors that support banning these types of assault weapons because that's what police argue for a lot, that it puts their lives in danger, makes their job harder.
And during the primary, you know, Mary Taylor tried to use the gun issue against Mike DeWine.
That's right.
If you remember, it talked about how he had sponsored things in the Senate that would have limited gun access. He also, as they're saying, you know, supported the assault weapons ban. He has lots of votes that would seem to be sort of law enforcement friendly. But I think he's had to walk a line to get elected statewide to try to emphasize, you know, his Second Amendment cred in order to get elected. And so he looks strong on it in some of his is campaign rhetoric, but at the same time, his record is pretty moderate.
The president toured or went to Dayton. He didn't go to the site, but he did go to the Haga Hospital, where many of the wounded were being treated. And he was joined by both U.S. senators from Ohio, Mayor Nan Whaley from Dayton, that kind of a thing. And everything seemed to be okay. And then really within hours after him leaving, it just seems like it's a complete meltdown. And I'm, you know, they're just lashing out at each other. And he's calling everybody a loser on Twitter and so on. What is that? I mean, I know you guys don't cover the federal government, but what does that portend, in your opinion, going forward?
Well, I think, you know, the thing is, the reporters were not allowed in on that visit.
And, right, in the hospital, yeah.
Yes. And what happened in the hospital, you know, the way that it went down, a lot of people saw that as a campaign opportunity for President Trump. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, you know, got people a little outspoken about, you know, hey, you close the reporters out and then you do all these, you know, handshakes and, you know, all this smiling.
There were photos and videos and
Right. And so I think that kind of preempted all this. And then there was a reaction to it on both sides. And but, you know, it does seem, though, a lot of times in a lot of situations that a situation can be fairly calm. And then when President Trump is interjected into that situation, things change. And he does tweet a lot, you know, and that turns off, you know, that turns off some people.
Yeah, and his persona as a national leader, you know, he'll give it a try. He'll give it a try to be, you know, have this healing moment or whatever. But he can't resist going back to his phone or wherever he tweets from. Mm-hmm. And saying something that sort of divides him and his supporters from other people, whether it's Nan Whaley or Sherrod Brown or, you know, immigrants or whatever. And it winds up sort of undercutting what he's trying to do in his formal role.
What was weird about it was that because there were no reporters allowed at the event, of course, they interviewed the people that were with Trump to find out what happened, and that included Sherrod Brown, our, you know, U.S. senator, and also the mayor. And they both, what I was struck by, they both said, yeah, Trump came, he was well received, he did the right things. They even said Melania did the right things. I think that was Sherrod Brown talking. And then they went on to say how they encouraged the president to get behind some gun control laws.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty moderate, their statements. I didn't think it was any, you know, flame throwing
pretty,
or anything like that.
It's
like
boilerplate.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Blah blah after.
But
like
something
that
struck the president as an attack, because that's what you saw him. His response was
he was
like,
lashing out again. Yes. I want to just get to a few calls. Let's see, Dave in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
You know, they're sitting on there talking about, you know, and the governor wants to make all these new laws, going to make a bunch of new laws.
Right.
If these people just followed the laws they already have, this wouldn't be happening. I mean, when are they going to get through their head that these are not law-abiding people doing this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're not supposed to use a gun to kill people. That's already against the law.
Well, you're not supposed to kill people. Hmm. You're not supposed to kill people, period. That's it.
Yeah,
whether
right.
Use a baseball bat, a knife, or what, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you're making more laws and more laws and more laws. The people are following the ones you already got. So lawing your way out of this is not going to fix it. You know, I think you're going to have to go to into the court system of the punishment of when you do this.
Well, that's one
you're
of his proposals.
Have to make the punishment
I mean, that,
more.
Yeah.
You know?
I think people.
Yeah, go.
To his comment, I think people on the other side of this issue are saying, yeah, here's the difference. The baseball bat, you could kill someone with a baseball bat, but you're not going to be able to do the amount of damage in such a short
in
period
30
of
seconds.
Time that you can with a gun. Yeah,
it's the gun access that we haven't really got the laws straight around. I think, you know, that's part of the issue is, are there, is there a background check to get it? Are there enough Are there enough limits to...
Or is it like going and getting a pack of gum nowadays? I mean,
it's important to note as well that a lot of times these shooters go into these shootings not expecting to survive.
Yeah.
They expect to be killed as part of it. So whatever laws you have on the books, whatever penalties you have on the books are really not going to serve as much as a deterrent to people that are basically on a suicide commission. Yeah. You know.
Mission. Dave, thanks a lot for that call. We're going to hear from other people. I know you're out there, and I want to hear from other people with other points of view, so stay with us. This is our weekly reporter roundtable, and we are, yes, devoting the hour to the legislative response to the shootings, of course, most recently in Dayton, but also in El Paso and California just in the past week. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Joe Engels of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Julie Carr Smythe of the Associated Press, and Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about the legislative response to the mass shootings, most recently in Dayton, but also El Paso and California, coming all at once within about a seven-day period or so. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Julie, you wanted to talk about the school-related pieces in Governor DeWine's 17-point plan that he rolled out last week.
Yes. If memory serves, there are a couple pieces in there. One is, for example, to beef up use of these texting safety texts that a student can use. For example, say I'm witnessing a crime and there's a text number that you can send something to. And there one already exists in the state, but you know, one of the problems we've seen in other states with this is that students use it as a bullying tactic. So they text to the state attorney general, you know, so-and-so has marijuana in their locker or something, and that person gets harassed. They don't really have marijuana in their locker. And it's a tricky mechanism to use. Of course, it's good to have that kind of crowdsourcing on criminal behavior, but it's one to watch in the making of those rules if that does go through. And the second one is sort of a web scraping type of program where you would look at – you would watch students' profiles and see whether they are whether they're using hateful language or making threats. Of course, the federal government's already watching that pretty closely. But I did talk to someone from a group that supports student privacy who's talking about these kind of things can be built into a database that, you know, can follow that student for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. There are free speech issues with it. I just think this whole package and this whole issue is just it's a very difficult one to navigate because of all those issues.
Fraught, as they say.
Fraught.
Pam in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Pam.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you so much for discussing this. I want to preface my comments by saying I am a veteran. I also own a gun. I have a shotgun, which I only use for shooting skeet. I don't understand the place for assault weapons or bump lock stocks in a civil society. If anybody should own those, I would suspect it should only be the police and the military. There is no place for that anywhere else in this country. And I am sick to death of hearing of one child after another being mowed down. When are Republicans going to stand up to their leadership and the NRA and start doing something?
Pam, thanks a lot for your call. So Pam's bringing up the issue about the type of guns. Mm-hmm. She's not anti-gun. She's saying there's no reason for it.
Right.
People disagree with that.
A lot of people, I think, share her sentiment a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's at more like that 91% you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Pam, thanks a lot for that call. Madeline, you're on the air. Is it Madeline? You're on the air. Hi.
It's a pseudonym anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I don't know how many people do that, but go ahead, Madeline.
And the reason I use a pseudonym is because, of course, my take on this is when Mr. Trump says, you know, this person's mentally ill. Let's talk about what mental illness really is. Mm. Let's get that conversation going. Mm. I have a bachelor's degree in nursing, 10 years on the unit. I have a master's in library science. I have a productive life. I'm blessed to be retired now. Mental illness does need to be addressed better in our in our society. Mental health, mental wellness. So I'm just going to I apologize. I didn't realize this is the legislative take.
No, it's but that's a piece of the governor's proposal is to invest more state money in mental health services and also to free more beds up in psychiatric hospitals for people who are serious. It's a piece of all of this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's just so hard for regular folks to wrap their head around the fact that mental illness is I don't have an Uzi under my belt. I don't own a gun. I've never owned a gun.
Right.
You know, most people who suffer from these illnesses, depression, panic disorder, you know, generalized anxiety, most of these folks are really gentle souls.
Right.
So we need to talk about this, too. And I will get off the phone.
Thank you, Madeline, or whoever you are. I mean, it's about having a broader and better understanding of the issue of mental health
general. And one of the things the governor did mention was that, you know, part of what he hopes will happen is that the resources that are out there will be better made available and that there will be links between all of the like, for example, if you're an administrator, an educator, you know, where do I go? How do I do that? And there's an interesting nexus, actually, with the opioid crisis, because there's been a lot of work around, if you remember the program that Ohio funded through the Third Frontier for new ideas on how to deal with the opioid crisis. There were a lot of apps and things like that being developed where people could go on and find, you know, say addiction services in their community, or a healthcare provider could do that. And so add mental health to that, you know, you bring in the gun issue and, you know, there might be a nexus there to do something really helpful to those who are trying to figure out what to do.
And one thing, you know, we saw over the weekend is Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley tweeted out saying, hey, you know, if anyone wonders, yes, you know, I have been talking to a counselor. I've been trying to talk through this because, you know, these kind of situations, you see anyone, police officers, anyone who has to deal with these problems, they do have a toll on you. I mean, this is really tough stuff. Mm-hmm. And somehow in our society, I don't know how it's happened, but we have this thing and it's a stigma that's out there. And it's basically you are perceived as being weak if you need to talk to someone or you need to, you know, try to work through something. That is so wrong and it needs to be straightened out. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, hopefully we're taking steps to make sure that people who have ordinary people who may not even be mentally ill, but they're just suffering with trauma. I mean, people should be able to reach out and talk to a counselor without having stigma. You know?
Let's see. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. A week ago Monday, the Wall Street Journal reported in the commentary section, an article about six individual citizens who were carrying weapons stopped shooters in their track.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to the reporters are, how many lives are lost because the citizens of Ohio who stop other shooters are not reported? If I would think that if a mass shooter was going to hesitate because they thought the people they were going to try and shoot also had weapons, maybe we could save a few more lives, and those individual citizens will take out the shooters before the police even show up.
That's come up. before that it would make things safer. Thank you, Mark.
But it was, as we've pointed out before, it was less than 30 seconds that the police were responding. I don't know if someone had been in that bar with a gun, would they have been able to respond, you know, quicker than, you know, the police did? I don't know.
Right. And we've heard this argument in schools and other settings, too.
Right. Right. Bryant, is it in Grandview?
Yes, Bryant.
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah. And just what the previous caller commented on, the trouble with that argument that somebody, you know, in close proximity has a gun or something like that. So far, when anything like that has occurred, everybody has fled. There has not been one report thus so far in any of these mass killings where a gun-carrying permitted user stood there and fought against the guy. Also, I see that it's going to create a problem with law enforcement. Take the scenario where the guy goes ahead and downs the person, but all the police have is a report that there's an active shooter. The guy that did the right thing could very easily end up being a target because he's not identified.
Right. That, particularly with the Florida shooting, that became an issue. You don't know. It's happening so fast, and it's such a large area, too.
Right, and I mean the settings that we're talking about, I mean schools, a movie theater where you're engaged in the movie, church where you're listening to a sermon, or in Las Vegas, he shot from a hotel room. So, I mean, anyone who would have had a gun wouldn't have been able to reach
him. The other problem is the firepower. I mean, if you've got a small handgun in your purse, are you going to really feel comfortable whipping it out and shooting, trying to go after someone with an assault weapon? I don't know. I mean, I'm not a shooter, but
maybe from behind.
Maybe.
Brian, thank you so much for that call. I'm sorry that we don't have time for more calls today, but thanks for trying. It's obviously a topic that we'll be talking about a lot. And I'm wondering, is there a sense that this is going to take precedence moving into the fall when the lawmakers return? In Ohio,
I'm
at
not
least, obviously.
Hold my, I mean, I think they'll do something, but I'm sure that a lot of people will feel it. They didn't do enough. That's my prediction.
And I'm with Kathy. I think that's
true. And does that mean that you think that that group that's trying to get something on the ballot in 2020 will achieve their goal?
They might. They might. I mean, I think it's going to depend. DeWine is term limited. It's going to depend what Trump wants them to do. And whatever he wants them to do, they may do.
And I think they will, the lawmakers will try to keep that group you're talking about at bay.
They'll do just enough with marijuana.
They'll do just enough to try to keep that group out of
there. But as the polls are suggesting, with the disconnect between the general public and the legislators, it's only a matter of time before they take things into their own hands and go to the ballot with something. I mean, you've seen this over and over again on other issues. We'll see.
And is there anything else going on? I mean, or is this pretty much consumed the conversation at the State House at this point?
Well, right now this is the thing going on, but you know, who knows? That's a crystal ball. By the time they come back, as Kathy pointed out, you know, a month is a long time.
It's a long time in politics. Right. At least it is now. Heck, a week is a long time.
We do have
a couple days.
We do have this pending opioid lawsuit, the major national, and that will be supposedly coming to trial in the fall. And so that's another issue that's.
And Cardinal Health being named among them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the election. I mean, that's going to kick up fast and furious here in the fall.
Yep.
It's going to get busy
again. How'd you forget about that?
Oh, gosh, vacation. Kill me. Okay, so I want to thank all of you for joining us. Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, thank you so much as always.
Great to be here.
And Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch, thanks to you.
Pleasure.
And Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks everybody else for listening. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.